Structured settlement annuities. The rules for set out for annuity investments are set out in the Texas Administrative Code 1, and it's 358, 335, 336, and 337. And it's also found in the MEPD handbook at F7000. One of the questions that has come up over the years, and we have been consistent with this at least maybe starting two or three years after the DRA went into effect. The question is, does the DRA requirements for the immediate distributions as opposed to, you know the DRA forbids balloon payments and it forbids payments that are not regular payments. It does not make them require them to be monthly, but they do have to be regular payments. And so the question was, does that part of the DRA apply to annuities that are purchased as part of a PI settlement in a structured settlement setup? And the answer is no. The only authority I have found for that is an ETAG notes from 2006 when everybody was trying to implement the DRA and CMS was actually talking to us about it and actually giving input. Surprise. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? Anyway, the question came up in the ETAG and the response was the DRA provisions on annuities are not applicable to annuities that are purchased with the assets of a third party. Thus, we do not impose those requirements on a structured settlement annuity in a PI case. However, you are required to name the state of Texas as a residuary beneficiary, and that has to be ahead of the spouse or the child. The thinking behind this and the reasoning for it is that very frequently, Leslie is going to be dealing with lawyers who are setting up, worried about negotiating, paying off the Medicaid lien at the settlement of a PI case, and want us to agree to reduce significantly the amount of money that's going to be paid out of the settlement amount. One of the things we have done over the years is to allow some of that money to be put, or even all of that money to be put into a special needs trust. However, if that person is specifically very fragile and it may not survive even 2 years, much less the length of time of the annuity, if the state is not also the beneficiary of the annuity, we are not going to get paid back. So it's really important that we are given the opportunity to be paid back because we basically postpone payment until the death of that individual. So please just keep that in mind. I think there was something else. As far as regular annuities, we'll talk about that in a minute. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little confused with myself. Okay. Moving right along to IRA policy. I owe y'all an apology. I should know this after 19 and a half years with this agency, but I didn't anticipate how long it would take to get guidance out to the field about the new IRA policy. We did a policy clarification where when a person is 70 and a half and receiving the required minimum distributions, we have determined to exclude that IRA amount from the resource calculation for that client. It's also true for the spouse. Regrettably, I didn't anticipate it would take a year, and it might take a year. They're working on it right now. It may come out soon, but in the meantime, we have some proposed answers that I think are going to be what actually happens. First of all, let me just go ahead. I got a question. Does the IRA annuity policy stand like it has been? And the answer is yes. There have been no changes to that at all. If it's an IRA annuity, it retains its exempt status from the resource calculation. Now, the question that has come up, when a Medicaid recipient owns an exempt account like an IRA or 401k for that matter, how is the amount of income from the RMD determined? Right now, what we believe is going to be the answer to that, and we will let you know as soon as we know for sure, it looks to be it's going to be averaged over the for divided by 12, so it's averaged over 12 months. And then the next question is, if they've already received the RMD for that year, the answer is going to be the same. We are still going to average it over 12 months. And the last question, I know Mr. Farrell asked a few more questions. I didn't want to address those because we want to make sure we get the policy out, nailed down so that everybody knows those answers. And it should address all the things that you had sent in as questions for us. The last question is the RMD income accountable for both eligibility and the copayment? And the answer is both. Okay. Next step on the IRA section is about an inheritance of an IRA. If a spouse inherits an IRA from the other spouse, as long as that the inheriting spouse is going to be taking the required minimum distributions, we will continue to exclude that just as we did when it was the owner of by the deceased spouse. I am not a tax lawyer, and I spent many, many months trying to figure all this out. So, but I found this great publication that I'm actually sharing with field staff, and it's called Retirement Topics-Required Minimum Distributions. It gives some really good information about what the distributions are. It covers inheritance by a spouse, by another person. It tells you which of the retirement accounts actually have required minimum distributions, which means it's going to be the ones we look at and treat the same way. So I just commend that to you.